The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press, Religion News Service, and USA Today. Our first article was published by the Associated Press on August 21 and is entitled, Pakistan Hands Out Cash to Christians Who Lost Homes in Rioting Over Alleged Desecration of Quran, by Asim Tanvir and Munir Ahmed, Multan, Pakistan. Pakistani authorities on August 21 handed out thousands of dollars to nearly 100 Christian families whose homes were destroyed or damaged by a Muslim mob angered over an alleged desecration of the Quran the previous week. The government of caretaker Prime Minister Anwar Ahak Kakar said each household was getting 2 million rupees, the equivalent of $6,800, in compensation. Police say they have arrested dozens more rioters in ongoing raids, bringing the total number of those detained over the attacks in the city of Jaranwala to 160. On August 16, hundreds of Muslims went on a rampage over allegations that a Christian man and his friend had desecrated Islam's holy book. Christians who fled their homes to escape the attackers later returned to a scene of destruction. Many have been living outside since, fearing the burned structures may collapse. The rampage, one of the most destructive in the country's history, drew nationwide condemnation. Kakar, on August 21, traveled to the area to meet with some of the victims of the attacks and hand out the compensation. He promised in a televised speech that the state will ensure the protection of minorities, including Christians, Hindus, Sikhs, and Ahmadis. Kakar said none of the rioters will go unpunished, describing those behind the attacks as enemies of humanity. Earlier in the day, Mohsen Naqvi, the top official in Punjab province, where Jaranwala is located, announced the compensations on X, previously known as Twitter. Naqvi visited the city on Sunday and held a meeting of local officials at a burned church. They are worried for their safety. They are worried for their children who witnessed the tragedy and are traumatized, priest Khalid Makar said of the local Christians. All 26 churches in Jaranwala were attacked, burned, or damaged, he said. The rioters said a local Christian and his friend tore pages out of a Quran, threw them on the ground, and wrote insulting remarks on other pages. Police have arrested the two men. Police say local leaders from the hardline Tehreek-e-Labbaik party also incited people to violence, during which a Christian graveyard was desecrated. The party has a history of staging violent rallies in Pakistan over the desecration of the Quran in Sweden, Denmark, and elsewhere. Naqvi said the compensations would be completed within 48 hours and said that authorities have begun to repair the churches. However, Mukhtar challenged Naqvi's claim about the repair of churches, saying that the walls of two churches were only painted instead of being rebuilt. Under Pakistan's blasphemy laws, anyone found guilty of insulting Islam can be sentenced to death. While authorities have yet to carry out capital punishment for blasphemy, often mere accusations can incite mobs to violence and lynching. Next, an article published by the Religion News Service on the 22nd of August, entitled, More Than 100 Chaplains Urge Texans Not to Hire School Chaplains, by Jack Jenkins. More than 100 chaplains signed a letter urging local Texas school boards to vote against putting chaplains in public schools, calling efforts to enlist religious counselors in public classrooms harmful to students and families. The letter comes just days before a bill allowing public schools to hire school chaplains becomes law in Texas, the first state in the country to pass such a measure. The legislation, which has been pushed by activists associated with Christian nationalism, gives the state's nearly 1,200 school boards until May 1st of next year to vote on whether to employ chaplains. The letter was organized by the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty and Interfaith Alliance, as well as local advocacy group Texas Impact. The chaplains who signed the letter, released August 22, bemoaned the lack of standards for potential school chaplains aside from background checks, contrasting it with the extensive training required for healthcare and military chaplains. Because of our training and experience, we know that chaplains are not a replacement for school counselors or safety measures in our public schools, and we urge you to reject this flawed policy option. It is harmful to our public schools and the students and families they serve, the letter read. While chaplains who operate in multi-faith environments are generally barred from proselytizing, the Texas bill, SB 763, outlined no such condition, leaving each school district to answer the question on its own. There is no requirement in this law that the chaplains refrain from proselytizing while at schools or that they serve students from different religious backgrounds, reads the letter. Signers of the letter are members of an array of Christian denominations, including the Presbyterian Church, USA, United Methodist Church, Disciples of Christ, and Seventh-day Adventist. Some are part of the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. Several other signers identified as Jewish, Buddhist, or Unitarian Universalist. Texas Impact's member faith traditions recognize the unique value of chaplains in some of life's most challenging situations. And that's why they insist on rigorous training and oversight of chaplains under their commission. The Reverend Franz Schimmel, Texas Impact Board President and pastor at Messiah Lutheran Church in Weatherford, said in a press release. Last month, another letter sent to school boards by the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU of Texas, Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, and the Freedom from Religion Foundation raised similar concerns about the bill, which they called unconstitutional. Besides leading to religious proselytization and coercion of students, the July letter charged, chaplains are generally affiliated with specific religious denominations and traditions. In deciding which chaplains to hire or accept as volunteers, schools will inherently give preference to particular denominations, violating the clearest command of the Establishment Clause. One religious denomination cannot be officially preferred over another. As SB 763 made its way through the Texas legislature in May, State Representative James Tallarico, a Presbyterian minister in training, repeatedly challenged the bill and linked it to Christian nationalism. He also expressed concern about the bill's champions, the National School Chaplain Association, an arm of a Christian missionary organization that has previously expressed a desire to convert students and school officials to Christianity. Julie Pickren, a member of the NSCA's board who was elected to the Texas State Board of Education last November, appeared in a video on social media, since deleted, in which she celebrated the idea of chaplains proselytizing to school children. There are children who need chaplains. For the pastors in here, you already know that. We have a whole generation of children that have never stepped foot one day inside a church, Pickren said. Now an article published by the Religion News Service on August 21 and written by Michelle Chabin, entitled, Church Leaders Plead with the Israeli Government as Anti-Christian Incidents Increase in Holy Land, Jerusalem. As anti-Christian incidents perpetuated by religious Jewish extremists have increased in number during the past several months, church leaders are pleading with government officials to take the matter more seriously. Until recently, Those pleas have gone largely unheeded. Preoccupied with an unprecedented political crisis sparked by the December 2022 election of a government dominated by nationalists and ultra-Orthodox Jews, Israeli officials have given little attention to the anti-Christian assaults, say church leaders. Bishop Rafik Nahra in Nazareth, Catholic Patriarchal Vicar for Israel, called the police response weak. If synagogues were being attacked, the response would be stronger, he asserted. Police have arrested only a handful of the teenagers and young men who have spat at nuns and priests in the old city of Jerusalem, vandalized church property, and disrupted Christian prayer gatherings. This inaction has spurred even more attacks by dozens of religious extremists scattered around the country, according to resident Christians. The number of the incidents, the intensity and brazenness, lead us to believe that these fringe elements in society are becoming emboldened because they believe that certain elements in the government have their backs, according to David Parsons, vice president of the Evangelical International Christian Embassy Jerusalem. But on August 9, the government appeared to take notice. President Isaac Herzog visited the Stella Maris Monastery and Catholic Church in Haifa after a sect of ultra-Orthodox Jews who believe the prophet Elijah is buried beneath the monastery repeatedly tried to storm the Catholic holy site. The monastery was built on top of a grotto or cave where, according to tradition, Elijah once lived. I come here on behalf of the entire state and people of Israel to reinforce our commitment to the full protection of freedom of religion and worship in the state of Israel, the president told local Christians, who comprise roughly 2% of Israel's population of nearly 10 million. Herzog noted there have been several very serious incidents against the various Christian denominations in recent months. I view this phenomenon extremely seriously. It is unacceptable in any way. This phenomenon needs to be uprooted, and I'm very grateful to the Israel police and the enforcement agencies for taking this seriously, Herzog said. Since the beginning of the year, extremists have also desecrated graves at the cemetery of the Anglican Church on Jerusalem's Mount of Olives, and a visiting American Jew destroyed a statue of Jesus at the Church of the Flagellation on the Via Dolorosa. He was heard shouting, "No idols in the holy city of Jerusalem," while taking a hammer to the face of the statue. On May 28, Pentecost Sunday, dozens of Orthodox Jews surrounded Christians praying at the southern steps in the old city and accused them of being missionaries. A few of the protesters physically assaulted the Christians. In the 30 years I have lived in Israel, I have never seen such hatred and anger in someone's eyes, said Jürgen Buckler, executive director of the ICEJ, who attended the event. Soon afterward, Israeli lawmakers attending the annual Jerusalem prayer breakfast apologized for the incident. This behavior is completely unacceptable in my eyes. I would like to take this opportunity to apologize for this behavior on the behalf of the Knesset, Israel's parliament, M.K. Matan Kahana, a former minister of religious affairs, told the gathering. The incidents are organized by extremist groups like Lahafa, who consider Christians to be enemies of the Jewish people following centuries of Christian evangelizing and persecuting Jews. In a 2015 essay, Lahava founder Bensi Gopstein claimed that Christians have spent billions of dollars to disseminate spiritual poison in Israel. Missionary work must not be given a foothold. Let's throw the vampires out of our land before they drink our blood again, he wrote. Gopstein, who was once indicted for alleged racism, violence, and terrorism incitement, is reportedly a close friend of Minister of National Security Itamar Ben-Gvir, a far right-wing nationalist. A representative for Lehava said the organization does not give interviews. Sarah Hirshhorn, a historian and political analyst, said Lehava is a very fringe movement that believes the Holy Land is for Jews alone. It is violently anti-Arab and anti-miscegenation and pro-Jewish purity and supremacy. Most of its members are teenagers, she said. It's like a gang in the U.S. whose ideology is virulent and violent. Since December, when Ben-Gvir and other religious right-wing lawmakers formed the governing coalition, groups that attack Christians don't have fear of negative consequences, like being thrown into prison or disbanded, Hirshhorn said. They feel they can carry on what they're doing fairly unimpeded. Although the police have vowed to become more vigilant and have added more surveillance cameras around Christian institutions in the Christian quarter of the Old City of Jerusalem, and there is now a hotline to report anti-Christian actions, local Christians remain skeptical that much will change in the short term. While acknowledging the importance of Herzog's visit, Wadi Abu Nazar, a prominent Israeli Christian in Haifa, predicted that as long as extremist lawmakers are in the government, there will not be accountability. Abu Nazar recounted the conversation he had with an Israeli rabbi who visited the monastery to express solidarity with the Christian community. The rabbi compared the extremists to aggressive dogs. He said the dogs have always been here, but they were chained. Now, because of the government, there is no chain. Israel is far from alone when it comes to religious extremists, Abu Nazar said. In every country in the world, there are criminals, terrorists, troublemakers. What is important, he said, is whether state authorities are doing anything to deter the attacks. Parsons of ICEJ is hopeful the government will take more initiative moving forward. His organization is expecting more than 3,000 evangelical Christians from 90 countries to attend the annual Feast of Tabernacles this fall. We are already in dialogue with the police, he said. We now have an article published by the Religion News Service on August 21 and written by Claire Giangrave, entitled, Amid Climate Change Concerns, Pope Francis Says He Is Updating His Green Encyclical, Vatican City. Pope Francis announced in a speech on August 21 that he is working on the second part to his 2015 Green Encyclical on the Environment. Laudato Si, as heat waves and natural disasters around the world increase over the climate change. We must not forget that young generations have a right to receive a beautiful and inhabitable world from us. And this invests us with grave responsibilities toward creation, which we received from God's generous hands, Pope Francis said. The Pope added that he is working on a second part of the Laudato Si to update on current issues. 2 years after becoming Pope, Francis published his encyclical Laudato Si, titled after the Canticle of Creation by his namesake, St. Francis of Assisi, and meaning Praise Be to You in English, signaling environmental concerns as a high priority in his agenda. Earlier this month, at a meeting with Catholic young people gathered at the World Youth Day celebrations in Lisbon, Portugal, Pope Francis warned of the dramatic urgency of rising temperatures and climate change that require looking beyond polarizations and striving toward unity. We need an integral ecology. We need to listen to the suffering of the planet alongside that of the poor. We need to put the drama of desertification alongside that of refugees, the issue of migration alongside that of the falling birth rate, Francis said. His comments were made during a private audience with lawyers from member states of the European Council, who signed a document in Vienna in July 2022 affirming the importance of the rule of law and the independence of the country's judicial systems. Francis acknowledged the document was created in the difficult context of the senseless war in Ukraine and praised efforts to ensure human rights are respected even amid conflicts and violence. Now, an article from the USA Today, published on August 23 and written by Yannick Peterhans. Young Sikhs bring music, religion together. Makir Singh stood in the front of the Darbar Hall of a Sikh worship center in Southern California this summer, packed with several hundred people waiting for the teenager to play the taz. As he played the notes of the instrument, which dates back to the 1800s, Singh says he felt closer to his heritage and his religion. The 20-minute performance of an instrument that few people know of, and even fewer play, demonstrated how young Sikhs are revitalizing their music and transforming how the next generation will practice their religion. "I'm trying to get this younger generation to start picking up these instruments," Singh said. "It's becoming a lost art. I'm trying to bring it back to life." Many Sikhs no longer play the taz, a large peacock-shaped instrument with 18 strings that can be difficult to learn. The taz was replaced by many with the smaller and more portable dilruba, another niche string instrument within the massively popular music group of Indian classical music. The instruments are important to Sikhs because two of their gurus played them, and both have been credited by some with creating the instruments. Singh had played the dilruba and taz since he was 10. For the first few years, it was a friendly competition between Singh and his father. When his high school closed during COVID, Singh spent his time trying to learn the roots of the music he had listened to his whole life, Sikh religious ragas. Sikh religious scripture are written in ragas, a collection of notes and pitches meant to emote certain feelings. Each raga has specific religious meanings in the Sikh scripture. "Whenever I felt lonely, I just sort of utilized it as an escape from reality," he said. "That's what motivated me to now practice on my own, do things on my own." As his passion for the music and the instruments grew, he found that few still taught these centuries-old traditions. If he wanted the next generation of Sikhs to enjoy the music, he would need to be the one to teach it. Now 18 and living in Pasadena, California, he makes a 4-hour round-trip drive weekly to teach 50 students in Riverside. Simardeep Singh is a student at the University of Southern California, studying computational neuroscience and biomedical engineering. In his free time, he also plays the dilruba. He is not related to Makir. Simardeep Singh learned to play from teachers in the U.S. and India, often online. His dorm room is his practice studio. Beside his bed stands his piano, where he can check the pitch of notes against a gentle hum his computer makes. The hum helps him stay on cue as he sits on his bed practicing the sarangi. Simardeep Singh was determined to train on the sarangi, a bowed instrument similar to the dilruba and dilruba, two instruments rarely used even in Indian classical spaces because of their importance to his Sikh faith. "If we can't preserve the music that is behind the scripture, how are we going to preserve the text?" Makir Singh said. Raspreet Kaur, 19, is a student in Makir Singh's Friday advanced class at the Khalsa School, which serves all ages, teaching topics from Sikh history to the dilruba. Students leave their shoes outside the doors and sit in classrooms lined with silky, soft carpet that spreads underneath the desks and white fluorescent lights. She has been learning to play the dilruba for about a year and a half after seeing Makir Singh play at local events. Kaur uses these lessons and her nearly daily practice on the dilruba to connect with her faith. "It's a really big honor to learn from someone that is so well known," Kaur said. getting to learn from the best, basically. Makir Singh plans to continue teaching and attend UCLA in the fall. Looking forward to a career in music industry. He already publishes music making traditional ragas with contemporary styles. On Spotify, Makir Singh has over 400 monthly listeners and hosts tracks such as Kalignosity and Colorful, where he mixes traditional Indian classical music with contemporary lo-fi electronic beats. What I do with this music, with these ragas, I layer on top of hip-hop, R&B music, and I release them. So it attracts this younger generation, he said. This community is so important to me, and this is just my way of giving back to it. Our last article was published by the Associated Press on August 24, entitled Amputees Can Get Their Body Parts Back for Spiritual Reasons, New Oregon Law Says. Portland. Healthcare facilities in Oregon will be allowed to return amputated body parts to patients for cultural, spiritual, or religious reasons under a new law supported by tribes, Oregon Public Broadcasting reported. The bill, which takes effect on September 24, was spearheaded by St. Charles Health System and leaders of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. For some members of the tribes, keeping a person's body together is necessary for a smooth transition to the spirit world. In our spirituality, one of our sayings is, "One body, one mind," said Wilson Wewa, of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. When there's amputation, most of our tribal members know that we need to be whole at the time of our leaving this world to the next. Previous state laws made returning body parts either difficult or impossible. At St. James, body parts could be blessed and cremated with the remains returned to the patient. But Wewa said cremated remains wouldn't suffice for some patients, leading them to turn down life-saving procedures. It has led to, unfortunately, the death of some of our people because they've chosen not to get an amputation, Wewa said, and our community, the family of the deceased, had to live with that trauma of losing their loved one. Shiloh Tippett, a Warm Springs tribal member and manager of caregiver inclusion at St. Charles, said the new health system interviewed nearly 80 tribal members last year to get their thoughts on how the state law should change. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.